Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and what's coming next. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. To learn about how to grow your business, go to our website at sparkpartners.com. Go to our page that has all of our podcasts. We have lots of content for you to enjoy. And I'm just going to pull the pin here on the grenade, Adam, and toss it in your direction. Let's talk about what's happening in the market. And of course, a disclaimer, we're not investment advisors, but this is what we talk about, trends, we talk about business and how they're all interrelated with respect to trends. So what's happening, Adam?
Well, there's a lot of definitions for the market. It could be defined as every single stock that's traded. It could be defined as the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, or the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So we're going to focus today, when we say the market, on the S&P 500 and the Dow. At one point today, the S&P had achieved a highest position of declining 20% from that high point that it's been at. The Dow closed today down 15% off of its high point. Recession in the stock market, or a full bear market, is considered a 20% pullback. So the S&P pulled back 20, but came up a little bit, so we ended down about 18% from the high. So we're right at the edge of what would be considered a bear market. And that's got a lot of people, you know, pretty upset. Their investments have not done well in 2022. But I think it's worthwhile we sit back and look at this and try to understand what's happening overall. And specifically, I want to talk about growth stocks, because we talk all the time about growth and how important growth is. And if you don't have growth, then you're not going to be sustainable long term. And that's, I think, absolutely still true. Because what we focus on is sustainability. Now, take, for example, compare how we do an analysis to a private equity firm. A private equity firm wants to make an investment in a company, and they want to get out of that investment in 2, 3, at most 5 years. Yep. So they're trying to say, how do I quickly do something, meaning, you know, 6, 12, 18 months, make some big changes. Usually that involves whacking away at the cost pretty substantially. And then how do I try to show better cash flow so I can run around to somebody like a pension fund and jack the company up with a whole bunch of debt and borrow a lot of money against it, so that I get that debt money into the company, and then what I can do is I can walk away 5 years after I put my money in with a great big gain. That's not sustainable, and we often see the companies like Toys R Us, after a private equity firm comes in, when the private equity firm leaves, they end up in bankruptcy. And that's not what we do. We're very, very much different from that. And what we're focused on is, how are you going to be in business in 5, 7, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years? And we talk about, you know, the companies that have failed, like Sears, who did well for 50 years. Well, what caused them to fail? And then we're trying to talk about, how do you identify the companies that are going to be there in another 50 years, right? And compare, say, Apple to IBM, and what IBM is doing wrong and what Apple's doing right. So that's the floor under which the foundation upon which our podcast is built. And when it comes to investing, what I always tell people is that I think trying to time the market is a fool's errand, because there's so many different things that impact what happens on the price of individual stocks. But I'm an investor, but I'll also tell you that I invest money, and over the last 15 years, I've never sold anything. I mean, it's truly an investment. It's, I put money in those stocks so that they can go up in value, and it's going to be my retirement fund. So I'm not trying to say, how would I game the system by putting some in 2016, and it goes up in 18, I'm going to sell it, so I'll buy it lower later. I call that trading. And of course, the ultimate end of trading are people that just trade for the day. The other thing I want to make sure people remember is that the bulk of the market is not you and me, Manny. It's not us individual investors.
Right.
Most individual investors give their money to somebody like BlackRock. They give it to a fund.
And Merrill Lynch or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, and then that fund invested in the S&P 500, or say, oh, we're investing in tech stocks, or, you know, they'll have some group of stocks, and they'll ask you to pick among those groups where you want your money. But you're not buying and selling stocks. They're buying and selling the stocks in the funds. And, you know, private equity people are out there buying and selling stocks. And you've got Warren Buffett, who's buying and selling stocks. There's a huge difference between what they do and what we do, because they sell a stock, it's not a taxable transaction. If I bought a stock for 100 and it goes up to 120, and I think the stock market looks soft, or the company looks soft, and I sell it, then that difference, 120 versus 100 at 20, is taxable. It's taxable as income to me. So I've got to, it's got to go down low enough to make it worthwhile
to pay those taxes.
Sure. So generally speaking, since we don't want our investments to go down, you know, I don't want to sell because I'm betting on it to go down, and I'm betting on it to go down enough to pay the tax bill when I buy it back. So that's why you can see these people that are in these funds get in and out, like Ackerman at Pershing Square. He can jump into a position on a stock. He'll stay in it 4 to 6 months. And then he'll be like, oh, I'm getting out of that position. Or ARK Investing, which is really was really popular in 2020 and 2021. That was a big investment fund that people really enjoyed. It's had really high gains. And they would always talk about buys and sells. Well, the issue, again, is their fund. So they're not paying the income tax every time they do a buy and a sell. And people need to keep that in mind, because when you get into a situation where stocks are going down, those people can sell out of a position not having to make their money back, right? I mean, they can just say, I'm going to park money on the sidelines. But for us as individual investors, it's pay the tax, park the money, buy the stock, hope it comes back again, right? So yeah. We don't have that real luxury to park money, as that you'll hear people talk about if you read the financial papers. And if you're listening to somebody like Kathy Woods at ARK Investing, or again, Ackerman at Pershing Square, they can buy and sell these stocks all the time in ways that we can't. So you have to keep that in mind. You know, even Warren Buffett with Berkshire Hathaway, because he's inside that corporation, is a very, very different tax structure. So the second thing I think we got to keep in mind is that we've had some enormous gains. We've just completed the longest bull market in history. And that means that there are investors out there who put money into the stock market when they were 55 years old, who are now 70 years old. And so they put in the money, and it's gone up a lot. They bought stocks.
Yeah, some cases double. I mean, it's been crazy.
Yeah, so we've got these huge gains, huge value, and then the stock market gets soft, and they start saying, wow, I'm 70 years old. I better get that money out before it goes down. I can't afford to lose my pension plan. So they pull their money out of the stock market. And why would they do that? Well, one thing, again, they've got a huge gain. They want to protect the gain. But then usually some kind of a trigger. Well, we've got two triggers happening simultaneously. One trigger is the war in Ukraine. And people are looking over and saying, oh, look how terrible that war is. You know, it's making it difficult to ship grain around. We've got a terrible immigration problem with people trying to get out of the Ukraine and to other countries. You know, how can we forecast the future? We even have a threat of a potential nuclear war on our hands here. And that's very scary to people. So that's a big threat that people would say, I think I ought to get out of stocks and just put my money into cash so that I'm protected, you know, and I don't have to worry about the war. The second thing we have is that we've suddenly turned the corner, and after 2 decades, the longest period ever in the history of recorded economics, we've had the lowest inflation. You know, we've only had 1-2% inflation for 20 years. And what happened is, now that the pandemic is ending, we've got some inflation. You know, that people can't get parts for cars. They can't, you know, there's all these problems with the supply chain. Yet, if you want a car, you go in and say, I want a car. Well, you know, there's more buyers than there are sellers. And so the manufacturers can jack the prices up to whatever they want out of those things, right? So we've got demand pull inflation. And we also have, you know, supply chain problems related to it. So we've got
lots of problems with supply chain.
Yeah. At 8%. Now, the last time we had some inflation at over 6%, it ran all the way up to 18%. Again, the people that are 70 years old can look at this and say, oh, wow, the last time we had inflation at 6-7%, it went to 18%, and it was catastrophic, and the economy was terrible, and we had horrible problems, and, you know, it was like, you better buy a car this year because it's going to cost twice as much next year.
Yeah, you're talking about the early 70s, or what are you talking about?
Well, all the way from, let's say, 73, 74, when we had the oil price shocks, right, that ran all the way up into the Reagan administration, you know, and Paul Volcker was appointed the head of the Federal Reserve by Jimmy Carter, and Paul Volcker walked in and said, forget interest rates. I'm going to quit managing interest rates. Pulls the plug, and interest rates jump to 18%. We tighten up the money supply, go into a huge recession right at the beginning of the Reagan administration. I mean, it was bad. People forget what it was like in 81, 82. But,
well, I want to remind everybody here, we have a lot of listeners that are, you know, maybe under 30 that don't know how it was. Or, I mean, I'm 48, and I don't remember because I was a kid.
Well, I can remember. I graduated business school in 82, and it was the first year that the Harvard Business School was worried that not every graduate would get a job, because the people that wanted to work in manufacturing, like that would leave in 82 to go to work at U.S. Steel or would go to work at a Caterpillar tractor or a General Motors, there were just no jobs. The recession had just cratered everything, and capital assets had fallen out. Plants were being shut down right and left. And then again, the beginning of the Reagan administration was just terrible with this 18% interest rates, and nobody able to go find work. So the people that are 70, like I said, people that are over 65, they remember that. They say, oh, wow, last time we had some inflation, 6-7%, it got out of control.
That's why they're pulling out, well, at least one of the reasons.
So they're fearful of that. So again, I said, well, okay, well, that era, the smart thing to do was the stock market crashed, was to get your money out of the stock market. And if interest rates get up to 15-16%, you buy a certificate of deposit or you buy a treasury bond, something like that. And then you're going to clip these enormous coupons down the road. So you get a risk-free investment. Like if in 1979, 1980, you literally could buy a treasury bond, a 30-year treasury bond with a 17% yield. I mean, you got 17% return on your money for 30 years. And that was unheard of. Nobody had ever heard of that kind
of return. Unheard of. Yeah. What is it now, right?
I think now they're like 4, something like that, maybe 4. Now the interest rates have gone up. They're maybe 4 or 5% on long-term bonds. But that's the point, is that those people are saying, well, what, last time you could have a risky asset, which is a stock, and they got pummeled, or you could have this non-risky asset with treasury bonds and with great returns. So you have people saying, go to cash, go to cash, go to cash. And the stock market relies on buyers and sellers. And if you have more people as sellers than you have as buyers, then it's going to go down.
Problem, yeah.
Now, so a lot of people right now, if you read the analysts, they'll say, oh, we have what's called PE compression. That means price earnings compression. And they're saying, when interest rates were near zero, I was willing to live with a price earnings multiple of 22. But if interest rates are going to be 8, then I want a much lower price earnings multiple of like 12. And that's what they blame it on. And I think that's a wrong way to look at it completely, because I don't think earnings have anything to do with what's going on in the stock market right now. Most of the people are saying that their business is fine, or maybe it's a little bit soft. And if it's soft, it's due to their costs going up, not due to a lack of sales. It's not a lack of business. It's, we're dealing with these supply chain issues. And so what's happening, though, is the people that it requires to make a stock market, who has most of the savings? It's retirees, right?
Yep.
People have been retiring.
Pension
all
funds and all that, yeah.
Yeah, retirees, corporations, pension funds. Pension funds are retirees again, because they represent retirees. And those are the people that are saying, hey, I want to be careful, and so they're not buying. They're taking money out, putting it on the sidelines, and they're not buying, and that's caused things to go down a lot. But in particular, we've noticed that the hardest hit have been the growth stocks, the ones you and I like to talk about.
Yeah, of course, the FANG stocks in particular.
FANG stocks, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, these have enjoyed a tremendous run-up in price, just a tremendous run-up. And so if you had bought some of these stocks a decade ago, you've more than doubled your money, in some cases tripled or quadrupled your money, right? And so if you bought Amazon 10 years ago, you're up tenfold. Every $1,000 worth $10,000. If you bought Apple, you're up, I think, sixfold. $1,000 got you $6,000. So, huge gains there. And you say, maybe it's time to do that. Take it off, pay the taxes, but now I've got the cash. And if I'm, 70 and I'm going to live to 85, put it in the bank and maybe I'll buy a bond with it or something else. But, I don't have to worry about it going down in value. And so that's a big part of what's happening right now. Fear of the war, fear of the bomb, and then fear of inflation, and people that the demographics are fighting against this. You have the demographics of, if I feel fearful, then I want to get out. Because, again, so much money is controlled by senior citizens. So much of it is in the hands of investment houses that are dealing with an older population or looking for a quarter-to-quarter return. If you're Phil Ackman, you care about how your fund does quarter-to-quarter. You don't care. You're not looking long-term. You're not looking at sustainability. You're trying to say, how do I do quarter-to-quarter? So what I want to just take a minute, kind of go over some of these companies and really try to say to people, not only am I personally not a seller, I'm personally a buyer in this era right now. And that's my point of view, and I want to try to defend my point of view. And if somebody likes that, then they can follow me, but that's their personal decision. I want to take a look, for example, at Apple, okay? Apple has done very, very well. Like I said, if you bought it a decade ago, you're up something like sixfold. since June of 2021, okay? Well, I'm sorry. Since in this year, since it hit its peak, it's down 25%. The stock's 137, okay? Now, last time Apple sold for $137 a share was June of 2021. Okay, so we're coming up almost a year.
Yeah, about a year.
The idea is you sit and say, okay, so a year ago Apple was worth $137. Has Apple underperformed expectations over that year? No. Apple has met or exceeded its expectations, but we have fear. So we have people fearful that, oh, there'll be a shortage of chips. We won't be able to do business in China anymore because of what's going on with public relations. You know, we're going to end up at war with China over Taiwan, and, you know, the Ukrainian thing's going to get out of control, so nobody's going to be buying iPhones. But if we get practical about this, what's really going to happen is even if we start having ongoing difficulties, the number one most popular phone in the world is the iPhone. Now, it doesn't have 60% market share. I think it has about 30% market share because there are a lot of really cheap mobile phones out there. But if you ask, go around the world and ask people what they want an iPhone. So in terms of positioning the company, it's got the platform that's the most popular, and it's got the iTunes store, which is the most popular, and it's got the most apps, which are the most popular. And I haven't seen anything getting ready to knock that off. You know, I don't see any competition. We're not going to go back to living without mobile phones.
No.
It's not going to happen.
I guess the question is, why has it gone down 25%, right?
Again, it's back to fear. And people who are fearful are selling out. Whereas, you know, it might be time for those of us who aren't so fearful. Can we practically look at the future and say, well, is it likely to be better? And I think, yes, the answer is it's going to be better. In which case, it should easily recover to where it was and go on. Let me go to starting initially with the older companies. Apple's been around a long time. Google's been around 20 plus years, right? And it's trading right now, traded today at $2,180 a share, $2,180. It's down 28% for the year. So it's slightly worse than Apple's 25. The last time it was at this price was April of 2021. So it was a full year ago. And again, Google, or, you know, Alphabet, as the company's known, has it underperformed for the last year? No. Is it hit a growth stall of two consecutive quarters of declining revenues? No. But the stock is down out of fear, you know, that somehow Apple's platform has changed and you won't be able to use cookies anymore, and privacy settings will change, and they're just, you know, YouTube ads will go away. I mean, you really, at these prices, you have to believe these companies are getting ready to walk into a huge failure. And a huge failure can only come from either, A, everybody walks away, the lack of demand, which would mean we're going to quit using mobile devices, quit using the internet for buying and selling things and communicating, and quit having ads on the internet, right? And that's not
likely,
right? We're not going backwards on that. The third one I want to pick on, again, another one that's around 30 years old, is Amazon. Amazon's trading right now around $2,150 a share. It's down 43% this year. 43%. It has not traded at this price since April of 2020. That was 2 years ago. Now, I want to remember what we were doing in April of 2020, right? We're in the early stages of the pandemic, right?
Yeah, right.
And as that pandemic is hitting, as people are starting to buy things from home. And from 2020 till now, Amazon wildly exceeded
everyone. They've been killing it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely killed it. In fact, its biggest problem was, could we get people working in the distribution centers? Could we get drivers? Could we get packages out the door? Could we do it? And it was sort of like, if somebody could fog a mirror, hire them, for crimey sakes. We just need people. We need people. We need people. Now what happens is the growth rate's not what it was, okay? And so they're saying, hey, you know what? We may have overstaffed a little bit. It's might be kind of like the old rat through a snake, you know? It kind of came in the big bite up front, but now it's working its way through the system. And we're working on that. We're working on getting everything lined up. But trading at 43% below where it was at its peak, and at prices that it had before the pandemic, would indicate that everybody thinks that we're going to quit buying from Apple. I'm going to quit buying from Amazon.
Yeah, which is absolutely wrong. As a matter of fact, it's going to go the other direction.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, once the trend is in place, the trend keeps going. We've said that over and over. We've demonstrated it business after business. So the Amazon of the future, if anything's going to, you know, the Amazon e-commerce retail, the Amazon AWS sales, those things are just going to grow. That's the direction the world is headed. To be able to buy it for a 43% discount from where it was, again, seems to me like one of those opportunities, right? Where you could just sit there and say, well, this needs some more time.
I think the whole lesson here is just about the framing. You know, people see hear about the stock going down, and they automatically go from A to Z, and they don't stop to really look at the situation. They don't, and I don't know where that mentality comes from, and maybe you can shed some light on that, Adam, but how do people actually go from A to Z without noticing that they've missed B through Y, right?
Well,
or B through X.
Let me take a look at the other side of this. So on the other side of this, we saw the price of oil jump up to over $100 a barrel. Now, you and I know we hit peak oil, right? The demand for oil has hit its peak because we're electrifying the world. We are, you know, electrifying our houses with solar panels. We are electrifying our cars, and then we're charging them at home with our solar panels. And we're charging them up at the gas, at the department store or the casino or wherever we park our car. That, I mean, we're electing, and you know, if I go into a Home Depot these days, do I see all gasoline mowers? No, I mean, we sell these electric mowers. I personally, when I moved last time a year ago, I didn't. When I bought a new mower, I bought an electric mower with a battery in it. Bought two batteries, bought the mower. I found it to be very convenient. Actually, the mower's much lighter. It's much easier for me to handle. And you know, we're seeing cities move towards making it illegal to use two-stroke motors. So those old leaf blowers with the two-stroke motor on it, we have municipalities making those illegal because they're loud and because they put out all that smoke. So the trend towards, you know, having an ecology, a good ecology, awareness of our ecology and awareness of the bad things in our ecology and climate change, that hasn't changed. Those trends are still in place. We're still electrifying, yet Exxon is almost at the highest price that it has ever traded. Exxon's at $92. It hasn't been any, last time it was near this was January of 2018, right? And the all-time high ever of the stock was 103 in July of 2014. So we got the stock at $92, trading where it was in 2018, headed towards the pricing that it had in 2014. You have to be just unbelievably short-sighted, because what you have to be saying is, okay, the war in Ukraine means we're going to shut off Russian oil, okay, and then we're going to need oil from more people like Exxon, okay, but how long is that going to last? The demand for oil is going down, right? Everything's shifting to another market. And by the way, we still have Venezuela and Colombia and Mexico and Saudi Arabia and a lot of other countries.
A lot of other players.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia could flip a switch tomorrow and take $15 out of the price of oil in a week, just by pumping more oil out of the ground. Or, you know, the UAE, the Emirates, they could do something close to that. I mean, you got Kuwait, you got Dubai, you got these countries. There's a lot of oil out there. It's not totally reliant on America to make this work. And at $100 a barrel, okay, we got gasoline at $4 a gallon. It was $4 a gallon back in, 2005? We were almost there. I mean, we are at record prices, but if you adjust for inflation, we're not at record prices on the price of gasoline. But people are pissed off. People are talking about inflation. And so it's kind of like, oh, well, let's go buy an oil company, which is kind of like, man, if I had owned an oil stock, I'd be like, I am so lucky that this is happening. I need to get rid of that stock now because I never thought I'd get my money back on that dog.
Right.
Well, it's coming back. Look at the other one. We've got the port there in Ukraine is getting hammered. You know, it's terrible. It's horrible. The Russians are dropping bombs. The Ukrainians are fighting back. I'm hearing tens of thousands of soldiers are dying. I think a lot of innocent people are dying. It's a horrible, horrible situation. But there's two impacts on that. One of them is that there's a bunch of grain that's raised in the Ukraine is stuck and it's not getting shipped. And there's a lot of predictions that, well, you know, this could cause some famines, especially in countries in Africa, the continent, Africa continent. And, you know, price of grains are going to go up a lot. And they're saying that we're not going to get a good harvest out of it because Ukrainians can't farm because of the horribleness of war. And so that's going to cause a shortage of production. And again, grain prices are going to go up. So you look at it, there's a company called ADM, which stands for Archer Daniels Midland. It's one of those companies that you've never heard of because they do things like corn. their business is corn, and their business is wheat, and it's these basic products, and you don't care about it, right? I mean, it's not exciting like plant-based proteins. You know, somebody that's figuring out how to replace hamburger meat with a plant-based protein, and you're looking at a lot of growth. Well, ADM is trading at 84. It recently reached its all-time high. In the last week, it reached the highest it has ever sold for at 98. It did that in April of this year. So here's somebody who just does corn and wheat. What people are doing with their money is when they've got some money on hand, if they're investing, they're putting it in the most short-term thing. The idea that this oil price will stay at this extraordinarily high level, and that would imply the war will last forever, and we're not going to get Saudi Arabia to ship more out, and the United States production's not going to come up, and we're not going to service our own clients that well. So you have to really believe that the world is coming to an end to think oil prices will remain at this high. And you have to believe the world is coming to an end to think that grain prices will stay this high. You know, the reality is that the most grains don't go into bread that humans eat. Most grains go into the mouths of steers that become beef, that become the meat we eat. And yet meat demand is going down, right?
Right.
So demand for grains has not been growing, and it's not been a growth business of any kind. No. Once again, it's trading at an all-time high.
It goes back to that myopic vision that I mentioned yes. earlier about people just short in front of their face is all they can see.
Yep. I mean, trading for as you said, right in front of your face, or trading for the end of your nose, that kind of a thing. Yeah. And that's, to me, I'm like, let's look at this. How sustainable is this? If we all know, I mean, every forecaster, even General Motors, is saying that half of all new cars in 2030 will be electric. And General Motors is the worst positioned. So everybody else gives it a higher number. So we know that gasoline-consuming cars, the internal combustion engine demand is going down. To put that at the highest level of the stock market is weak. We also know that the world's moving towards healthier eating, you know, more concern about the ecology. To be in there with these ADMs of the world would be just foolish, right? That's not where the growth of the marketplace is. On the other hand, is our desire for entertainment high? Well, of course. Is our demand to connect high? Of course. You know, the use of Instagram is off the charts. You and I use WhatsApp, and I use it all the time with people, especially if they're outside the United States. I spent last week up in Ontario, and you know, a lot of international clients, and we use WhatsApp. And Meta, which is Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, it keeps growing. Now, the actual Facebook platform may be reaching some level of short-term saturation, but their revenues per user, we pointed out in previous podcasts.
Yeah, we had that about a month ago, that other podcast. We talked about it.
In the last decade, it's gone up tenfold. It's gone up from $5 to $50 per user. So, you know, the trend is all going their way. They have not hit a growth stall. You know, everybody says, oh, Apple's changing its privacy rules and all the ads are going to go away. And I'm like, are you serious? And on top of that, they came out and they said, hey, we're investing in the metaverse. They're number one in terms of the Oculus goggles that they've modified and improved. And I looked it up today. Year over year, sales of reality headsets are up 98%. It's a 100% for your growth market.
Yeah.
And the reason I was reading about it is Apple has been demonstrating a product they're going to take to market to their board of directors. So you got Apple getting into that market. So you're going to have Facebook as a leader. You got Apple in that. Well, what's happened to Facebook? You know, Meta is at 193. It's down 50% this year. And it hasn't traded this low again since April of 2020. So back at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yep.
So, and again, they exceeded everyone's expectations for 2 years, and now all of a sudden, what? It's going to collapse. And the last one is Netflix. Netflix is trading at 186. It is down 73%. It has not traded at this price since December of 2017. 2017.
Five years.
Yeah. 5 years ago. You have to believe that somehow Disney Plus and Peacock and HBO Max are just going to wreck the entire business model for Netflix. It's going nowhere.
Yeah.
And you have to completely ignore the podcast that you and I did where we talked about how Netflix was pivoting into gaming, how they were making new investments in gaming. Gaming is growing at well over 100% per year. You have Microsoft. The largest acquisition in 2022 is Microsoft's acquisition of Activision. They're doing tremendously well. They've caught up with Sony. They're winning the battle. And now here you have Netflix saying, we're going to introduce more gaming into the platform we have at Netflix. So you have to see Netflix at these prices, you have to believe, first of all, that for some reason they're going to collapse. And vast swarms of people. We're talking hundreds of thousands to millions of people are going to shut off their subscription. And they're not going to come back. They're going to shut it off and leave it off permanently. And you have to believe that the gaming investment that Netflix is making is not going to pay off at all.
I want to bring it to the from Wall Street to Main Street real quick here for a lot of our viewers and listeners. You know, you hear us talking about all these things happening with the stock market and the market in general, and you seem, you know, maybe you feel like you're removed from that, but it's all part of the fabric of the rest of the market. So when we talk about things like Netflix being down 70%, and you think, how can that affect my business? Well, you know, part of you can think that Netflix is going down the tubes, but if you really look at the whole situation, you'll realize that there's other factors at play. And for your business, you've got to be smart and take that same position of the long-term trends. What's happening with the trends? The market is going to do what it's going to do for other reasons. You got to stay on course with what the trends are doing and where the trends are going.
So one of the things everybody's talking about, whether or not we're going to have an economic recession in the United States within a year, and whether that economic recession will maybe expand to be all of North America to include Canada and maybe even Mexico, and maybe we're going to have a really, really bad recession in Europe. You know, and they're looking at these indicators and saying, oh, look, you know, because we've shut down shipments, globalization and trade in Europe, we've had a reduction in trade, a lot of it due to the war, and a lot of it due to reduction of imports of fuels. They're saying, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to have this big recession in Europe. And the amazing thing is we've never had a recession with 4% unemployment. And right now unemployment's at record lows. I mean, we are almost at, we're having the record low unemployment numbers ever that we've recorded in America just 3 months ago. And we've gone through a year of these record low unemployment numbers. Every meeting I go to talking with people about growth, they say, Adam, I like the idea of growth, but how am I going to hire people to work in my company? I'm dying. I can't hire people. I'm increasing my pay. Microsoft said they were going to greatly increase the pay their employees, looking at doubling the pay to their employees. So we have this great resignation. We have all these people out there working. How can you have a recession when you have full employment?
Yeah.
That's never occurred. Recessions happen when you get to the point that you're making so much, but nobody has a job and nobody can buy anything. That was stagflation. That's what we had back in the 80s. We had super high interest rates of 16-17%, simultaneously with unemployment rates that were up in the 8-9% number, right? And that was a true recession with high inflation. We called it stagflation at the time. And again, people over 70, a lot of people think, oh, it's just going to be stagflation all over again. When in fact, we have just the opposite. Right now, we have demand that's going through the roof. We have people walking into stores and complaining they can't get their products. Like, I want a new car, but I can't get one. I want a used car, but I can't get one. Oh, I'd like to buy a house, but I can't get one. I can't afford it. Oh, I would love to remodel my house, but 2x4s and new appliances are too expensive. The recession, again, is caused when you can't get work, right? And you can't get a job and you can't get paid. Right now, we are at record low.
Here's an interesting anecdotal thing that I want to share. So I went to Palm Springs from Tucson a couple days ago. I went up and back, stayed the night, and went to a conference, kind of a last-minute trip. And what was interesting on the way up and on the way back, I have never seen so many quote-unquote bobtail rigs when the semis don't have the trailer, just the front end. It was because usually when I'm driving when I drive to Phoenix, for instance, very rare, super rare. You know, they're always loaded. They always have the trailers. And they were all, you know, I would say a good 40% of all the semis I saw did not have a trailer. And so you got to think about what's happening. It goes back to the supply chain. I've got friends that own companies that are dying for employees. They're trying to figure out ways to be creative and go to the universities and go to these high schools and start early because they have not enough people to fill the gaps that they're trying to fill. They're pulling retirees out from retirement because, and they're giving them these giant, you know, bonuses. because they don't have anybody to do the work. It's incredible, and you're absolutely right. This is not the marker of the traditional sort of recession that we hear about.
I mean, if you thought Amazon was going to go in the tank, then you'd have to think, well, that means that Walmart is going to do fantastic again, right? Like, they're going to go back to being the number one high-growth retailer. Well, first of all, I can't even say that with a straight face. It's such an absurd comment. But then Walmart is down 27% this year. Right? So we have an irrationality here in the market. They're reacting to war and inflation and fear of recession and big things like that, rather than saying, well, you know, with all these people working, what are all these people? So the retirees are going away. Where are these people that are working going to put their money? Then what we're hearing is, well, they're not going to buy iPhones. Oh, no. And they're not going to buy anything on Amazon. That's not going to happen anymore. And they're all going to walk away from social media. They're going to quit watching streaming on television. And they're, by the way, not going to do Google searches, not going to look at AdWords, not going to look at YouTube videos. That's all going to die. That's what you would have to believe, is that's all going to die at the prices these stocks are currently trading. But a level-headed person, you know, we can sit back and look at this and say, I don't think this is this. What we're seeing in terms of the depression of these stocks, these growth stocks, is not due to circumstances in the business. It's not due to lack of sales. It's not due to a botched business. And it's not due to bad products. It's due to these external factors that aren't really related to them that are affecting everybody's, large group of people's willingness to invest. And remember, there's a lot of money. The most money is in the hands of these money managers, these people who literally, these funds that have $200 billion, $1 trillion under management. And if they get a little scared, they just say, I'm not going to buy.
Well, right, and they cause a huge shift.
They put the money in cash. So I'm encouraging people to say, look, I wouldn't be worried about a recession right now, no matter what anybody says, because as long as people are working, that's what's important. And yes. Right now, I could probably go out and get a job, which is crazy given how old I am, but I probably could get a job.
So this is a great segue to, you know, one thing we're going to do, and this is exciting news that I'll share with our audience, and really thank you for listening to us over the past couple of years, is that, you know, our course, we are going to be taking some of the elements of the course and creating a series of mini courses to make it more accessible. And we're doing that at the moment. But we still have our full-blown masterclass called Think Innovation that gives business owners and entrepreneurs all the tools needed to think like an innovator, think bigger picture. We always talk about, getting out of the box, then thinking. If you're thinking outside the box, you're still in the box. And certainly these elements that we're talking about today are clear as they can be for us that this is not going in the direction of that the recession. My kid turned 16 in a couple weeks, and his mother and I were looking for a butterfly knife, of all things, online. And we were having a hard time because they're all sold out everywhere. So you're talking about, you know, these little micro indicators and the bobtail rigs I told you about. These are all things that we can just, you go to the restaurants and they're packed. There's waiting lines, and, you know, you can't buy just anything, and you got to really put get on top of that mountain and look down. Don't look from the mountain up, you know, because you're not going to see anything except for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And so I guess with that, Adam, what are your final thoughts before we sign off for today's podcast?
It's a great time to be an entrepreneur. It's a great time to look at these trends and build into them. When fear is the greatest is when the money making is also the greatest. And now is a good time to get your mind into the trends, build yourself out some ideas for growth, but pick up our package, use it to help you with your planning, and go out there and make something happen. It's one of the best times ever.
The time is right. All right. Yes. Thank you very much, Adam. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Cheers.